out came this gentleman and we said, hey, we're making juice down the street. Would you be willing to sell it here? And he said, well, let me see what you're doing. And he literally followed us out of the store, got in his car, drove down Monroe Drive to our little store, saw what we were doing, and he said, if you give me a cooler, I'll sell your juice. So we got a cooler together. He put the cooler in the best location we could have ever asked for. And that Kroger was the number one Kroger. We didn't know that, but it was. And overnight, we were making juice 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Hi, I'm Sanjay, and I'm a serial entrepreneur for the kicks, and I also invest in startups.
And I'm Shannon, a recent college grad working on building my first company.
And this is Startup Days,
the show where we take a behind-the-lens look at starting and growing a company from the perspective of founders and investors.
Welcome to Startup Days. On this episode, we've got Leslie Zinn from Arden's Garden. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Thank you.
So we've known each other for a little while. We were lucky to get introduced. You're also a fellow Georgia Tech grad.
I am.
We didn't talk about that before the show, Shannon. I don't know if you realize that, but Leslie's one of us.
Cool.
She's a Yellow Jacket.
Oh, I love y'all.
Shannon's a Yellow Jacket.
Even better.
As well. Yeah. So let's start with kind of your life story. Where were you born and raised? And
So I was born in Princeton, New Jersey. My dad was getting his PhD.
Okay.
And he
Princeton.
At Princeton.
Okay.
Yep. And he got offered a job at Georgia Tech.
Oh, okay. So that's what brought you down.
That's right.
Oh, that's awesome. So it's in the family then for you too.
Well, I was solicited to go in there, but I had some detours along the way.
Yeah. Okay. So you went through college. Did you ever think that you were going to be an entrepreneur when you were at Georgia Tech?
No.
Okay.
I didn't really know what I was going to be.
Yeah. What were you studying at Georgia Tech?
I was studying industrial management, but I had actually started at BU.
BU?
Boston University.
Oh, Boston University. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, those are the detours you're talking
those
about.
Those are the detours. Yeah. My father in my junior year flew up to Boston and was like, listen, you can party for free at home and get a job. So I had a 5-year detour.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that brought you back down to Georgia Tech. And then coming out of Georgia Tech, what did you do? What were you thinking about?
Well, I graduated in 91. It was kind of a tough time in the economy, not a lot of jobs. And so I had been a personal trainer while I was in college. So I just stuck with that.
Okay.
And so I was doing that. And then I got a job from a marketing company, really small. And I worked for this marketing company for a year. And I was making pretty good money, but I wasn't really proud of what I was doing. So I thought, I really want to have something that makes me feel like I have purpose. So I decided I was going to go to med school.
Okay.
And I didn't have enough sciences, being a business major. So I went back to tech and took all my sciences and took my MCATs. And then my mom bought this juicer.
So you didn't go to med school?
No, I did not.
Did you? How well did you do on the MCATs?
I did pretty well in the MCATs, yeah.
So you could have gone, but then...
Yeah, but there were a lot of people applying to med school at the time, because when there aren't jobs, everybody applies to med school and law school. So it was really competitive.
It's business school, too.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
The opposite problem that we have right now. Apparently, it's the easiest to get into Harvard Business School right now than it ever has been.
Maybe we should apply.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's great on the resume.
I might actually have a chance to get in there.
Right, me too.
So, okay, so your mom bought a juicer. What is that about?
Okay, so my mom is this huge health nut. Always has been. Like, she fed my brother and I the grossest concoctions all our lives. And so in 1963, she read about this juicer called a Norwalk, and she wanted it, but it cost $1,500.
In 1963,
yes.
It was
15. She's like,
that's kind of a car.
That's like a little out of range for me. So she said, I'll wait till I have more money. So fast forward 30 years, she still wants this juicer, only now it's $2,200. Still can't afford it.
Okay.
But she says, I don't want to go my whole life without this juicer. So she does the all-American thing. She gets out her credit card. She buys the juicer. And when she gets it, she calls all her friends and she says, I've got this great juicer. If y'all want me to make you juice, I'll do it. And
now, before she had bought the juicer, had she ever tried it before?
No. No, but she had read about it.
Okay.
So she'd read about it. Cold press.
She hadn't laid eyes on it. She'd never tried it.
Well, she had seen it in a magazine, but she had never touched it.
But not in real life.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. So it was special because it was a cold press.
It was a cold press.
Okay.
So this is 1993.
So how is that different from another kind of juicer?
Okay, so the most common juicer is a centrifugal juicer.
Okay.
So a cold press doesn't introduce heat. It's a masticator, so it grinds up the fruit or the vegetable, and then it's a hydraulic press that you press through, in the Norwalk's case, cheesecloth, in a commercial setting, a larger bag. Okay. And so it makes a higher quality juice. Things that hurt the nutrients in juice are heat, light, air, and electricity. And the number one being heat.
So when you've got those juicers that all of us have at home, where you get the orange and you spin it around,
okay,
that thing.
That's a citrus juicer.
That's a citrus
different.
Juicer. So you're creating heat in that too, right?
You are. But when in a centrifugal juicer, like when you're dropping that apple or carrot or piece of beet and then you're shoving it down, it's spinning really fast.
I see.
That's a lot of heat.
Oh, okay.
And it's throwing the juice out the side. Yeah.
Okay. So you don't want to do that. That's bad.
Well, it's not as good. I wouldn't say it's bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Norwalk is this cold press.
Yeah.
That's why it's fancy and expensive.
Exactly.
And so she gets this one.
Yes.
And then does what?
She calls all her friends and she says, I've got this juicer. And if you guys want juice, I'm going to make it for you. Now, understand, this is not a business. This is a mission of wellness.
Was she trying to charge her friends to
help
pay for the
thing? No. No money. No money transferred hands. Just juice.
Just juice.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Was she getting anything back for the juice, or she was just...
Yes, feeling of worth. She was just spreading her message, which was wellness.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And so how many friends? Did any friends actually take her up on this?
Oh, tons.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
That's good.
Yeah. She was making juice for a lot of people, and this juicer was super slow. So it was taking a lot of time to make all this juice. And
so how slow is slow?
Oh, it makes a gallon an hour.
A gallon an hour?
Maybe.
Okay. And how much product do you have to shove in there to get a gallon
an
hour?
Okay, so to make a 16-ounce bottle of juice, you need 3 pounds. Okay, so there are 8 16-ounce bottles in a gallon, so 24 pounds of produce.
Wow.
For a gallon.
And this was 1993?
93, yep.
So produce wasn't super cheap then either?
Nope.
Okay.
24 pounds of produce right now is not super cheap.
No, it's not.
So.
So that's how she started.
Yes.
And then what happened?
So there was a health food store that opened up in her neighborhood called Return to Eden. And they heard about her and they said, hey, come to the back of our store. We'll give you the produce. And
for free.
For free. We will sell the juice and split the sales. So she thought, oh, this is a home run, you know?
Yeah, sounds like
it. I'm in my neighborhood.
Your cost of goods is nothing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So that's what she did. And she recruited my brother and I to help.
Okay.
So my brother had just gotten his, it wasn't an MBA, it was an MSM at Tech.
Okay.
Didn't like his job. So he left his job and started helping my mom. And I was still at Tech at the time, doing my sciences, doing the MCAT. So yeah, we were both helping her. And my brother took one look at that Norwalk juicer and he said, there is no business here.
Just because of the amount of production you could make?
Yes. It's a home juicer.
Right.
And a really, really slow home juicer. Yeah.
And then what happened?
He said, I'm willing to invest $6,000 to buy a cold press that it's a commercial cold press, but I want to be CEO.
Okay.
My mother said, be whatever you want. That's fine with me. So.
Okay.
Did
she actually have an incorporated company at this point?
No.
So he was the CEO of a made-up company. Okay.
Yes. Minor details.
Okay. Just trying to understand.
Yeah. But there were talks. I mean, I think they had engaged an attorney and, it was happening.
Okay. So how big was this commercial one?
It's much bigger. It's about 10 times
the size. Okay. And how much could it produce?
Oh, much more. Much, much more.
Okay.
So it's significantly more. Yeah.
Okay. So then what happens? You got this first commercial one. Were you doing this still in the house?
No, we're at the back of Return to Eden.
Oh, okay. So you were making all the stuff there.
We are.
In their facility.
Yeah, that's a generous term. Have you seen the back of a grocery store?
Yeah.
There were no floor drains or anything like that.
And
so, yeah.
What was the market like at this time?
There was no market.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, no. So we have this pretty nice juicer, actually, but nobody was buying juice. So after about 9 months, no one was getting paid except for my mom, and it was very little. So as a last-ditch effort, we said, hey, mom, go into Buckhead where people have money and try and sell this juice.
Okay.
At the time, we were bottling in mason jars. We were writing the names of the juice on the top of the bottle.
Okay.
And so our idea was to go to like stock brokerage houses or lawyers' offices or somewhere where we thought people had money. But my mother doesn't think like normal people.
And let me stop you for a second. How much does each one of these
16
mason jars?
Ounces.
16 ounces. 16 ounces. How much does it cost?
So we had two lines, one all organic.
Okay.
And one commercial.
Okay.
And the commercial was $3 a bottle and the organic was $8.
Wow. Okay. Probably back then, nobody even knew what the heck organic was.
Right.
I mean, this is like early 90s, right?
Right.
Nobody was really thinking about it. Okay. Yeah. So she's going into the stockbrokers, or you task her to go to the stockbrokers.
Well, I guess we didn't communicate very well. We just said go. And she went. Okay. But she went to hair salons.
That's not where stockbrokers are.
No. And that decision literally turned our whole company around.
As a good decision.
So it was a fantastic decision.
So why is that? Why is that the right place to go?
Hairstylists are stuck in their stations. They always have cash from tips. They want things that are new and trendy, and they always have a different customer in their chair. So in 3 weeks, my mom was selling three times the amount outside of Return to Eden as we were selling inside Return to Eden.
And what was that split? Was it mainly the folks working in the salon, or was it also customers?
Both.
Was it getting out?
Everyone.
So the customers were finding out about this and then starting to buy as well.
Yep, exactly. Okay. So in 3 weeks, we had hired three other guys to come in and deliver. We had four routes. That was a business plan.
So then what happens?
So then Return to Eden's like, well, we were outgrowing that lovely facility. And so we found a new space. My brother lived in Virginia Highlands, and there was a Little Caesar's Pizza that had been vacant for 10 months at 10th and Monroe. So we met with the landlord. I mean, who were we? We were like Arden's Garden who? And the rent was $2,500 a month, which was like $1 million because we were paying nothing at Return to Eden. So we were terrified. And the landlord said, hey, I will not charge you a security deposit. There will be a 30-day out if things aren't going well. You could just take the space, basically. And so we did. And that was 24 years ago. And we're still there.
So what was the area like at the time?
It was hip, but nothing.
Like what it is now.
Yeah. It was the perfect place for us to be. The thing is that it was a retail space, and we didn't have a retail concept. We were manufacturing and delivering to hair salons. So we didn't have floor drains, you know, water readily available. So it was really challenging to manufacture in a retail space. So what happened is one day we got in the car and we drove down the street to Kroger at Ansley. And it's 1995 at this point. So in Atlanta, there was no Publix, Whole Foods, Sprouts, Fresh Market. There was Kroger, A&P, and Winn-Dixie.
Yep.
And that Kroger was the number one Kroger. We didn't know that, but it was. And so we went to the customer service and we asked for the manager, and out came this gentleman and we said, hey, we're making juice down the street. Would you be willing to sell it here? And he said, well, let me see what you're doing. And he literally followed us out of the store, got in his car, drove down Monroe Drive to our little store, saw what we were doing. And he said, if you give me a cooler, I'll sell your juice. So at the time, Kroger was super decentralized. They gave managers that, you know, ability to make those decisions. So we got a cooler together. He put the cooler in the best location we could have ever asked for. And overnight, we were making juice 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at that little location, just for that one Kroger.
So before this, what were you doing? One shift a day?
Yeah, one shift.
Okay.
Well, long shift, 6 in the morning till like 8 at night.
Okay, so but you went to 24 hours, so you had to staff up.
Well, we had three people that worked each shift.
Okay.
So, I mean, we only had one machine, so there's only so much you can, but, you know, we had to
do it. So you were constrained by the machine more than by the people.
Yeah. Well, it's also not easy to find people that want to juice for $6.75 an hour at 3 in the morning.
So how did you find somebody to juice it for $6.75 at 3 in the morning?
We just had people that either were interested in health or were needing a job. We got very lucky in the beginning.
Yeah. So no secret tips about how you find somebody doing a job that almost nobody wants to do.
I think that if you're willing to, like a lot of the time, one of us would be overnighting with them. So it wasn't like us getting other people to do the work we weren't willing to do.
Right.
So all of us were working really hard, and I think that it's much easier to get people to work hard if you're working hard right alongside.
If they're seeing leadership do the same thing,
yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
And at this point, are you starting to think, wow, this could really be something? Was there kind of an excitement there that drew people in as well?
For sure. Absolutely. It was super exciting. Kroger was when it felt exciting, because Kroger, right. Then we quickly got two more Krogers.
Okay.
Right after, because it sold really well.
So during this process, did you guys phase out the salons?
We don't do it anymore, but the salons stayed on for a few years, because what happened is we kind of like subcontracted them out. The three guys that we hired, we gave them those routes.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'll tell a funny story. So my mom always delivered. And every so often she would need to do something, and she would ask me to cover her route. And I would do her route, and literally every other person would pull me aside and say, listen, Arden only charges me $2. And by the end of the route, I would like be blowing smoke out my ears, you know, because, you know, half the people were paying $2. And I would get back and I would see my mom and I'd be like, Mom, you cannot sell these juices for $2. And she'd say, Leslie, they can't afford them otherwise. And I'm like, Mom, we can't afford it.
Well, so what was the cost of actually
about
making?
$2.
And what was the actual price that they were supposed to be
$3. So but it wasn't one person. It was literally like every other. But this is just was her thing. Just right. Spread the wellness.
Right. So yeah. She was more focused on that than
yes.
ever making money or anything else.
Money
like that.
Making is not in her vocabulary.
Yeah. Okay. So at this point, the three of you are still involved, right? It's you, your brother, and your mom. And so you're managing the shifts.
Yeah. So we quickly outgrew that store. You know, we needed a manufacturing facility. It was very apparent. So my brother found one at 14th and Howell Mill.
Okay.
And we moved the manufacturing. And by the point that we moved, which is in 96, so we had been at 10th and Monroe for a year and a half at that point. People in the neighborhood were walking by and getting jazzed by a bunch of numbnuts running around making juice. And they were like, hey, can we buy the juice here? And we were like, sure. So we just brought a cooler and put it up front. So by the time that we moved our manufacturing, we were selling enough juice out of that store to keep it as a retail store. And that turned out to be a really fortuitous decision, because that retail store kept us really close to our customer. And being really close to your customer lets you learn what the market wants. So we just added some new varieties, things that we can make in store for the customer there. And we moved the manufacturing over to 14th and Howell Mill.
So in the life cycle of Arden's Garden, how many of the flavors or products that you've got have actually come from suggestions from customers versus internally developed products?
I'd say 1/3 have come from customers.
Really?
So what will happen is a certain smoothie will become super popular in the store.
Okay.
And that tells us. Like Sunrise.
Right.
Came from that. And it's been our line for, I don't know, 20 years.
Okay. So in the store, people can make
whatever they want. Mm-hmm.
And you guys actually keep track of everything?
No. But it was like, hey, there's a lot of people that are making this strawberry peach mango smoothie. I think it's really popular. And we're like, hey, we can make that for wholesale and let's check it out. And then another way is that we had a customer who ran a yoga conference, and she brought in like these yoga gurus, and she asked us if we would make special juices that the gurus put together. And we said, yeah, here are the list of ingredients they can pick from. And we couldn't make the exact amount that she wanted, so we would always have leftovers. And so we would just send them to our stores to sell it. And one of them was a humongous success. And so that it's actually our number one seller. So.
Which one?
Yoga One.
Oh,
that's the name.
Okay. See, we're unwrapping some of these things. Okay. So you've moved the manufacturing over. You've got one store. What happens next then?
We opened a second store in Little Five Points in 1998.
Okay. I'm sure that was a hit.
It was. That store is 280 square feet.
Wow.
With a bathroom.
That's super tiny.
It is super tiny.
Wow. And how does that store compare to the first one? Is it busier?
Yes. Super busy.
And why did you pick, or how did you pick Little Five or that exact location?
Well, one of our biggest customers at that point was Sevenanda.
Okay.
So Sevenanda used to be on Euclid, and they had this little space right next door. So we were delivering to Sevenanda, and we knew how much we were selling there.
Okay.
We knew where our people were. These were our people.
Right.
For sure.
So you figured having a real store there where people can walk up.
Yeah.
And get something made. It
was a great decision.
So some of it was you were going to cannibalize the sales that you were
But it actually doesn't happen.
Did it not happen?
It did not happen.
Okay.
Because people that are shopping in Sevenanda, they're going into Sevenanda.
Okay.
And Sevenanda actually put our cooler in the very back of their store to draw people all the way through their store because people would walk all the way back there.
So they used yours like the milk in a regular grocery store.
Exactly. Okay. Right. It really worked to build sales for both places.
Okay.
Because Sevenanda's customers are our customers and vice versa.
Okay. So by going in, that did not decrease your sales throughput from Sevenanda. Okay. That's counterintuitive.
I wouldn't have
thought that would have been the case.
Right.
Okay.
Well, it's also kind of like when competition comes to town, it tends to build awareness.
Right.
And so when you might be terrified, it actually can increase your sales.
Right. Okay. Okay, so you've got two stores now in the manufacturing facility. Then what?
So everything's great. Like, life is awesome. And then Odwalla put out a batch of juice in California that had E. coli. It literally changed the entire, like, you know, fresh juice was like free-flowing, hippie love, you know, everything's great.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, the regulators, the FDA,
came in.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, we were just swamped with regulators and people doing, you know, inspections and stuff like that. And it really changed the way the business felt. And then also the customers became very afraid because the way that the situation was spun is they made it an industry problem as opposed to a company issue.
Okay.
Meaning, you know, that particular company. So,
and I'm imagining you were getting health inspections like that was
we
happening
were,
regularly
was,
this whole time.
Well, yeah, once a year.
Okay.
But now we were getting like visits all the time.
Okay.
And
like weekly or monthly?
Not weekly,
or?
But they would come in for a week and it was really stringent. Like, it was more relaxed in the beginning. You know,
right.
Nobody was afraid of juice. And then all of a sudden, fresh juice became this killer, really dangerous substance. So the whole nature of the company changed.
Did you guys do anything different in terms of like talking about our marketing or anything else like
we
that?
We did absolutely nothing different in our processes. And almost 98% of the industry switched to pasteurized juice at that point.
But you guys did not.
We did not because it did not fit our mission.
Okay.
And so we lost our biggest customer, who was Kroger.
Okay. And it was for that one reason?
Because they wouldn't pasteurize.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But we stuck to our guns because my mother didn't believe in it, and we wanted to put out a healthy product. So,
and so is your mom still involved in the business at that point?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Is she still involved now? Or?
No, she's been retired for about 8 years.
Okay. Okay. She's had her run.
Yeah, well, she's 81, you know.
Does she still give you advice sometimes?
She does.
Yeah.
She does. She's really good at like suggesting flavors.
And it's her name on the company, right? So,
you know, it's so funny. We were eating at True Food on Saturday and I gave them my credit card to pay and the waitress came back and she said, "I just noticed it's Arden's Garden and I just love Arden's Garden. I go there all the time." And I'm like, "Well, here's Arden." She's like, "Oh my God." It's like a celebrity.
Does this happen to you guys a lot?
It does sometimes, yeah.
And how's the dynamic of working with your mom?
So my mom is the most accepting individual ever. Like, to the point that she's not even almost reality-based. Everything in my mom's life, like, she sees the positive in everything. So in that way, it was incredible. Working with family is very challenging because you can all of a sudden become like 5 and 7-year-olds. Even though you're 35 and 37 or 25 and 27.
So you and your brother, there were challenges there.
Yep. And also you reenact your roles. Like, even with my mom, you know, like I was the person that was putting the controls in, you know, and it was very frustrating to me that my mom was so generous with, you know, we were struggling, you know, even though it was fun, we've never taken a loan. Well, we've taken 2 loans to buy both buildings and that's it.
That's it. No other outside investment or anything else like
that. So when you're bootstrapping a business, everything you're making is going back into that business and you're working hard and you're not making anything at that point. So yeah, it's really, it's a challenging situation.
So let's fast forward to today. So now the business is you. Mom's not involved.
Right.
Your brother
is not involved.
He's not involved either. Nope. He's moved on.
He has moved on. Yeah. He left in 1999.
Okay. Okay.
It's been a long time.
Relatively early in the development of the company.
Yeah. He came to me in 98 and said, I don't want to work with you anymore. So, yeah, so it was a
back to when you guys were kids, basically.
It was super stressful. Yeah. It was a very, very dark time, quite honestly.
But on good terms now, I hope.
Good enough.
Good enough. You can see each other on Thanksgiving.
Well, we had Hanukkah together on Sunday.
There you go. That's definitely good enough.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you're running the company.
Right.
How big is the company in
right
terms
now?
Of people? Yeah, like people, stuff, whatever.
We have about 140 employees.
Okay.
We have 16 retail locations.
So you're not making it, the facility has changed from the one that we just talked about.
The 14th and Howell Mill became a very hot area.
Okay.
Not a manufacturing area.
Right.
So we saw that coming. And in 2002, we relocated to East Point.
Okay. So that's where you are now?
We are in East Point, yes.
Okay. And how big of a facility are we talking about there?
So we have two facilities there. The first one that we moved into in 2002 is 24,000 square feet,
wow,
which we still operate out of.
Okay.
And then a year ago...
That's the size of Prototype Prime by
is
scale.
It?
Yeah, we're 25,000 square feet
here.
Yeah,
exactly the same.
It's the same size.
Yep.
It's big.
It is.
Okay. And so now, Ben?
And now we just opened our second plant, and that is the entire building is 180,000 square
Holy
feet.
Holy cow, that's
but
huge.
We only occupy 100.
Only 100.
Yeah.
One, four times bigger than Prototype Prime
right.
is the only part of that.
Exactly.
Okay. And then that supplies how many stores?
Wholesale, we have, I think at this point, we're around 900 stores, 800.
900. And then mostly in Georgia?
Seven states.
Seven states.
Yes.
Okay. So which states are we talking about? All the Southeast?
All the Southeast. Yeah.
Okay. So you've got some kind of logistics and shipping and all. Like, how do you deal with all that? So that's totally different than
it is
the first store, right?
It is. And we really just expanded in the last 6 months outside of Atlanta. So we're
so how has that been going?
It's been going great, but it's been a learning curve for sure.
Is it growing pains?
I mean, for sure.
In terms of the employees, like dealing with that, has that been a challenge? Or
when you get humongous orders with a 7-day lead time, it can be like back to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Really?
Yes.
So some store out there says all of a sudden, and that's
yes.
usually what you commit to, a 7-day lead time?
Well, when you are doing, when you're going through a DC where they're owning the juice distribution center, you give them, you know, that's actually a long lead time for a grocery store.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But when you're doing something like us with a very short shelf life, it's a challenge.
And you got back into Kroger.
We got back into Kroger.
So they came back.
They did. I've broken up with many of my customers and gotten back together. I have some really great ups and downs. Like the one that we've expanded with the most recently is Publix.
Okay.
And
that's been an up and down.
Oh, Publix. And right after we moved into the plant in East Point, it was 2003, they called me on a Friday afternoon and they said, are you sitting down? And I was like, yeah, that's not a good way to start the conversation. And they said, starting tomorrow, we will no longer be taking product from you. And we had been selling to them for 5 years. Just moved into this facility, already had, I mean, on a, you know, a small scale, we'd already bought all the fruit, already made all the juice for them, and they weren't going to take it.
And why? What
because Odwalla had been bought by Coca-Cola, and Coca-Cola had arranged a deal with Publix that they would go into all their stores and Publix would get rid of.
Exclusively.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so I thought that might be it for us.
Yeah.
Because they were a very large customer, and at that point, it was a large part of our business, and we had just bought this plant. So I sort of took the weekend to get my head together.
Yeah.
And on Monday, I came back, and I thought to myself, what makes us different? What is, you know, I said, well, we taste better. Okay, great. Well, we're healthier. Okay, great. But one thing I knew about our customers is that they were super loyal. So I thought, you know what?
I'm going to the brand.
To the brand.
Okay.
I said, I'm going to reach out and see if I can. And the other thing I knew was that Publix was incredibly customer service oriented. I knew it from dealing with them because, like, they would have a store out in Ackworth that someone wanted to buy our juices. We couldn't distribute to Ackworth in 2000, let's say. They would have a manager drive to a store that had our juices, pick up the juices just for that one customer.
Really?
It happened multiple times. So on Monday, I wrote an email that I sent it to 30 people that had either written something about us or in some way were involved with Arden's Garden. And I said, you know, for the past 5 years, we have experienced strong growth with Publix. It's enabled us to build our brand. And we just found out that they're going to stop carrying us in lieu of Odwalla. And if you would like to be able to buy Arden's Garden in your local Publix, or you just want to support small local business, please talk to Publix because they will listen. And that email got forwarded multiple times. And so many people reached out to Publix that in 3 weeks, Publix called us back. And not only did they bring us back into the stores that we had been in, but they added 200 more stores.
Wow.
So that horrible experience turned into like a windfall for us.
And had that not happened, you probably never would have thought to do something like that to get you into 200 more stores.
No. It was incredible.
So in retrospect, that was a good thing that happened.
It was an amazing. And then on top of this, years later, so this happened in 03, Yahoo read an article about it, and they had a series named called Driven. It was about entrepreneurs. And they called me, and they were like, hey, we'd like to do a story about this, you know, Odwalla situation. This is 2012. And so they came down to Atlanta. They filmed a video about me, and they put it on. And the first day, it got 1 million hits.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
Crashed our website three times. We got 14,000 orders because of this one video. Yeah, it was amazing.
So mail order orders then. So
shipped orders.
Shipping to people.
Exactly.
So I got to ask you then, so where's the furthest that you've ever shipped product?
California, I think. I don't think we can get to Hawaii, but we've done to California.
So only inside the U.S.?
You've never gone.
Because you have to keep them refrigerated.
Yeah. Exactly.
I was hoping you'd say like Antarctica or something.
I would love to.
So this might be taking a step back, but when you're talking about, you know, you get this call on a Friday and then you send this email on a Monday, like I think so many of us in the early stages experience these highs and these lows and we talk about them a lot. What do you do to kind of just keep it all together and stay level-headed?
So I was panicked. Like I cannot explain, like I really thought this was it. When I hung up the phone with Publix, I couldn't even like string a sentence together. And
you were probably worried about making payroll and all those things, right?
I had literally our mortgage was three times what my rent had been, never mind what the utilities were. I mean, my utilities at the new plant were over $10,000 a month.
Wow.
So, I mean, this was...
It was a deep hole all of a sudden.
It was super scary.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that... And in addition, I will say, like, when my brother left the company, I thought I would fail. I felt like I didn't have the skill set that he had and that this was going to be it. And I was terrified. Every morning I would wake up and I would just want to pull the covers up over my head. And I was like, you know what? I got to suit up and show up no matter what. And that is my motto. You know, you feel the fear and do it anyway.
So now we're, what, 25 years?
24 years.
24 years into the company.
Yep.
Do you feel like that ever now?
Sometimes. Not quite as terrified.
Right.
But it's funny. I was talking with someone this morning, and she said, that's just part of being Jewish.
being terrified about stuff.
You know, like no matter how good things are going,
you're worried about
you
something.
Always have to like look at that one little thing that's really not up to where you think it should be.
I don't know if that's not being Jewish. I can't speak to that, but I think that's part of being an entrepreneur. So you might have a double dose of it.
Right? Okay.
Right? Jewish and an entrepreneur, but like always worried about something.
You know, I heard Steve Madden one time speaking and he said, I'm like the entrepreneur. I think I'm going out of business tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's kind of a common thing.
So let's talk about the future. What do you see for Arden's Garden? Like 24 years in now, almost 25. What is Arden's Garden in 25 years?
So I would like to see the brand expand, maybe not nationwide, but definitely along the East Coast. I think that I want us to evolve into more of an oasis of health. and not just juice. So we've introduced a whole new line of vegan foods because we can't live by juice alone. And as a person that's really interested in my own health, I see how hard it is to be healthy in today's environment. So we want to be that place that people can go to get healthy food and get healthy education.
And get it quick.
That's right.
One other question I have regarding your product line is, how did you guys come up with the Grand Slam?
My mom came up with that. So my mom is a huge wheatgrass and she always loved ginger. And we were already making lemon and cranberry, and they have huge, awesome health benefits. So, yeah, you know, you look at things. We've been doing shooters now for the Grand Slam's been around for 22 years. And now, for the first time, Publix asked us to make it available for wholesale.
Really?
Cool.
So the Grand Slam is now available in Publix.
So it hasn't been wholesale before?
Never. Never. And they were we always offered it, meaning to in our retail stores. But yeah, so we did it for them.
So, okay, let's ask you some maybe rapid fire questions here. And let's see if we can get some good nuggets of knowledge for our listeners. Number one piece of advice for an entrepreneur out there starting up.
Don't ask anyone to do anything you're not willing to do yourself.
What would you say about an entrepreneur starting up and raising money or not raising money? You've gone down the not raising money. Like, what would you say about that?
Well, obviously, I'm going to say don't raise money because then you're not indebted to anybody else and you're running your own show. But I don't know the other side. I probably could have scaled more quickly if I had more money.
Do you ever think about that? Do you like regret not taking it? Do you
not
think about
all.
Taking it now? I mean,
I get offers all the time.
But now it's not interesting, I'm assuming.
Well, it just doesn't fit my personality.
Okay.
You know, I like to sleep at night and I don't like owing people money, so.
Yeah. Well, how would you advise an entrepreneur that's starting out that says, like, you know, what are the challenges a lot of times with entrepreneurs, especially young entrepreneurs, is that they don't know anybody. They don't have any connections. Like, how do you get out there and hustle and make those connections that can help you take your business to the next level?
You get out there and hustle and make those connections.
Okay, so what about the introvert entrepreneur? Like, what do they do? You're not that. I don't think I'm that.
Yeah.
Shannon's mostly not that. Like
a little bit of that.
Yeah.
Like, but it's the suit up and show up thing.
Yes.
Sometimes I literally feel sick when I'm about to walk into a meeting,
exactly.
But I just have to force myself to do it. And then, you know, I'm 2 years in now and it's gotten a little bit easier. I still feel
right.
like that sometimes,
right.
but it gets a little
and
better.
It just gets a little bit easier and a little bit easier. I think the other thing, and I tell this to my kids all the time, but I think it's really true for entrepreneurs. The answer is no if you don't ask.
It is. Yeah.
You
don't get what you don't ask for.
Yeah. So always. You know what? Put it out there. If you're afraid to ask, well, then you're getting a no.
Right.
If you ask, you never know what you're going to get. And
yeah.
I've been so surprised over the years how many yeses I have gotten that I never thought I would get. For real.
Just because you asked.
Just because I asked.
Yeah. Okay. What's the worst part of being an entrepreneur? What's the one thing that you hate the most?
Feeling like everything's on your shoulders. Yeah. Feeling like, you know, everybody's job is dependent on you. And if you make a bad decision, it's not only going to affect you, it's going to affect a lot of other people.
Right.
You know, it's not a safe place.
Yeah.
You know, you go to a job. Like for me, the thing that made me decide to go to Arden's Garden instead of medical school is that I interviewed at medical school. And I saw what that environment was like. And that did not suit my personality. So for someone like me to go to a job and work hard and get a paycheck, to me is horrible. I would rather work super hard and not be guaranteed anything, but have that freedom to do my best and let the cards fall where they may. And other people, you know, feel much more comfortable going to a job and just getting a paycheck. And neither one of us is right. You know, it's what's ever right for that individual person or
based
wrong,
on your
I should
personality
say.
And
exactly.
Your needs and desires.
Yeah.
I hear that a lot when we talk to folks and they talk to entrepreneurs or talk to me and they say, you know, I could never do what you do. It's so risky. And
right.
that. And I always turn around and say,
I could never do what you do.
You go in and you never know when you might get fired.
Right.
It's such a risky job to have.
It is.
And we don't have that as entrepreneurs because we're the only ones that can fire
That's
us.
That's right. But there's always someone telling you what to do.
There is, yeah.
The FDA.
It's always someone.
Yes.
If you have investors, it's investors.
Exactly.
FDA, government, IRS, it's somebody.
Right. There's always someone above you.
There's always somebody above you. Let's answer a couple of quick questions around hiring and firing. Any pieces of advice about that? Like, how do you find the right people and how do you let go of people to make it good for the organization?
Okay, so as far as hiring people, I have found it super helpful to hire people that have a similar passion to what you're trying to do. So if you're if someone's interested in health, then they do a lot better working in our company. They may not have the skill set that we're looking for, but they have the passion, and then we have the ability to train them.
So if they have the right passion, you don't care about any of the other stuff. You're like, we'll figure out where you go.
Yeah. Well, they have to have some brain capacity and the ability to be trained. But yeah. I think that people that do the best with us have an interest in this area. As far as firing goes, I've gotten a lot better at it over the years. There are so many times in an entrepreneur's life where we don't have enough employees. Yeah. And so you know that you have someone that's not working out, but you don't have anyone to replace them, and you just hang in there. And I have never been happy that I hung in there.
Right.
Never.
Yeah.
You know, so now, you know, I think it's better just to have a plan of action, which is a coaching plan that, you know, this is what A, B, and C is not going well. And here's the plan of action. And then if it doesn't hit those things, just make it a clean break at that point.
Okay.
Yep.
So if you weren't running Arden's Garden, what would you want to be doing instead?
That's a really hard question. What would you want to be doing? I would like to open up a nonprofit. I don't know.
Where's your like next passion? Your passion is healthy.
Well, my passion is definitely health, without a doubt. Like, I'm super committed in my own life. So I want to spread the message. That would be what, maybe it wouldn't be in a product, but it would be in a message. Like, how do we spread health? It really concerns me how unhealthy our country is.
Yeah.
So it would be in some capacity to spread health and wellness in another arena.
Okay.
Do you think we're getting there?
I do think we're getting there. I think
past
it's super exciting.
Past few years have been really pivotal.
I agree. And I hope it's not a trend. And I think that if we don't make it easy access for people, then it's not sustainable.
Do you think that's helped Arden's Garden even a little bit more?
It's helped us and it's hurt us. So when Odwalla and Naked came to Atlanta, we were the only game in town, you know, and I was terrified. When they came, it helped us because it really raised awareness. In 2014, when juice got super hot and there's so many juice bars now, we have definitely felt the competition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're trying to diversify what our offerings are and, you know, do the best that we can and keep our eye on the goal, which is to promote health. It's not to make X amount of dollars. So as long as we're doing that and we're doing it effectively, I think we're going to do fine.
Okay. So last question, since you're here in Metro Atlanta, what's been the biggest benefit of being in Metro Atlanta and what's been the biggest detriment of being in Metro Atlanta?
Okay, so the way that I describe Atlanta is that we are a very forgiving city. And what I mean by that is that if you work really hard here, you have a really huge opportunity to be successful. I've seen a lot of people work really hard in New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, and they're not San Francisco. They're not necessarily going to be successful. They can be super competent. But in Atlanta, there's a ton of opportunity, a ton. And even for us, one of the things that we're the most proud of is that our number one retail store is in East Point. This is an area that's super underserved, and that is even more opportunity. And people shy away from it, but East Point's coming. You know, there's so much opportunity in Atlanta. The thing that we struggle with the most is the traffic, because we're distributing to our stores every single day.
Okay. How much of an impact do you think traffic has? Does it
tremendous
cost you like
so much? It's
a lot in manpower.
Absolutely.
And
people sitting in traffic.
Money.
Yep.
Fuel and all those things.
Everything.
Have you guys converted? You're using just regular trucks
we're
right now.
We're using regular trucks right now. Yep.
Is that somewhere in the future?
Yeah,
I mean,
we're looking.
I can
we're
imagine
doing it.
Based
we
on the mission.
And we're doing a huge environmental push right now
yeah.
to, you know, add more, you know, like we're giving discounts in stores if you bring your own cup, if you don't use a lid, you know, all of that stuff. So definitely looking at alternative vehicles and less of an impact.
What about the plant itself? Is it right now powered on traditional, or is it going to solar or something
else?
Well,
it's not solar, it's traditional, but all of our lighting fixtures are, you know, environmentally friendly. We're working in all capacities, like we're composting our pulp and stuff like that. We're actually doing a gift with an animal farm locally that they use it. So, yeah, we're doing all of that. But
okay. With that, we appreciate you being on the podcast, Leslie. It's been fascinating hearing your story about Arden's Garden. And hopefully we'll catch up with you again sometime in the future as things continue to develop.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.